Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Śrī Bhaktivedanta ki, Grantara Śrīla Bhagavatam ki, Girira Maharaj ki, Jai Nitai Gopremanande. Okay. So tonight we'll continue Canto 8, Chapter 21, and we'll finish the chapter. So we're going from verses 26 to 34, and we're hearing about how Vamana Dev is taking the whole universe from Bali Maharaj, and how Bali Maharaj is glorified by offering Atma Nivedanam, or complete surrender to Vamana Dev. Text number 26. Thereafter, on the day of Somapana, after the sacrifice was finished, Garuda, king of the birds, understanding the desire of his master, arrested Bali Maharaj with the ropes of Varuna.
Garuda, the constant companion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, knows the confidential parts of the Lord's desire. Bali Maharaj's tolerance and devotion were undoubtedly a superexcellent. Garuda arrested Bali Maharaj to show the entire universe the greatness of the king's tolerance.
Good. What are the points?
Humble like a blade of grass and tolerant like a tree.
Good. Any other points? Okay, so the Lord enacts many pastimes to glorify his devotee. Just like you see the whole Bhagavad Gita, it is spoken on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and one of the main purposes of that pastime of Kurukshetra was to for Krishna to glorify his devotee, Arjuna. So therefore Krishna is remembered in the Mahabharata for being Partha Sarathi. And the same thing we see in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, in the seventh chapter of the first canto, we've mentioned many times, the first time that we see Krishna as Partha Sarathi. So why does Krishna do that? He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He takes that position to glorify the devotee. So Krishna takes pleasure in glorifying his devotee. You'll see in Vaikuntha, Lord Narayan, he won't take that position. You'll see that normally in Dwarka, Krishna's chariot driver, his name is Daruka. So you'll never see Krishna driving Daruka in the chariot. Krishna will never take the position of being the driver of Daruka, no, because it is Rasavas. And the master and the servant, they will not get mixed up like that. In Vaikuntha, you will not see these kind of pastimes with Lord Narayan. You won't hear about Lord Narayan, you know, taking a subordinate position so much to his devotee. So much. Maybe something is there. But when it comes to Krishna, you will see that Krishna likes to take the subordinate position. And he likes to glorify the devotee. He likes the devotee to be uplifted. So you'll see that the reason that, one of the reasons that Vamana Dev is performing this pastime is to glorify Bali Maharaj. Because Bali Maharaj becomes glorious. So Lord Vamana Dev arranges the pastime to show how perfect Bali Maharaj is. So we need these examples in the Shastra. And that's why there are many examples in the Bhagavatam and in the Vedas, in the Ramayana, the Mahabharata. They're full of examples of exalted personalities who who show an exalted position of Krishna bhakti in order to inspire us. So this is mentioned by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in the Madhurya Kadambini. He explains that why is it that the Pandavas are put into so much difficulty? Why would the Lord do that? Why would he put them into so much difficulty? It is simply to glorify the devotee and to set an example for the sadhakas, for the practitioners. Because all of us will have to face difficulties in our life. That is the nature of the material world. And there's always dukkhalayam, ashashvata, and there's always difficulty. So in order to set an example for us, then the Lord arranges the pure devotees to go through difficulty to show us how to respond to the difficulty and how to handle the difficulty. So the Pandavas, they handle the difficulty perfectly. And in the Bhagavatam, in the first canto, in the 8th chapter, we hear about the prayers of Queen Kunti. Now, how does she respond to the difficulties in Krishna consciousness? In the prayers of Queen Kunti, what does she say in regards to the difficulties?
She says, let those calamities come again and again, because if calamities comes, then you will not actually leave us. Then, if you are there, they cannot do anything.
And it allows us to remember you. So therefore, the devotee, he appreciates the difficulty. So that is why the great devotees, Krishna puts them through difficulties to set an example to us, to show us how to tolerate the difficulty. And when the difficulty comes, the exalted devotees, they pray, let that difficulty come again and again. Because it enhances or increases our opportunity to remember you. So this is what we should be aiming for in our Krishna consciousness. Let the difficulty come again and again. At this point in time, we don't pray like that. When the difficulty comes, we say, let it go away, again and again. We don't want the difficulty. But the advanced devotee, he appreciates the opportunity to surrender. So Vamana Dev is putting Bali Maharaj into a difficult situation to show us what we should do. So this is a test for every devotee, because Krishna will take away everything from us in due course of time. The Bhagavatam says this, everything gets taken away. But when everything gets taken away, how does the devotee respond? Bali Maharaj simply surrendered himself to Krishna. Right? And we see this again and again. One of my good friends, many things were taken away from him. He was very wealthy, actually. And all his money practically got taken away. And his wife left him, and so many things. But when all that happened, he just surrendered to Krishna. He took that as an opportunity to do more service. So then he went to the temple where he was staying, and he said to the leader of the temple, he said, do you have any service for me to do? Now I have more time. Can I serve? So this is the mood of the devotee. When everything gets taken away, we take it as an opportunity to serve Krishna more. So Bali Maharaj is showing us the perfect example. When everything gets taken away, then he says, now let me surrender everything to you. Let me just become your devotee. The Prabhupada also points out that the quality which is being especially exemplified here by Bali Maharaj's tolerance. And this is mentioned throughout the Bhagavatam. It is one of the principal or key qualities of a devotee. Third canto, then Kapila Dev, he says, Titikshaswa Karunika. And this is the quality of a devotee. A devotee is especially known for being tolerant. Krishna also mentions in the second chapter of the Gita, in the very beginning, that we must be titiksha, we must be tolerant. So this is the special example that Bali Maharaj is setting to all of us, that we must become tolerant in the face of calamity. Not that we become despondent. And Prabhupada mentions that in this section. A devotee does not become despondent when things are going difficult in Krishna consciousness. He doesn't stop coming to the Bhakti Vedanta class just because there are some difficulties in life. You see, sometimes devotees go through difficulty, they stop coming. One of our students, who came for many years actually, many years. I don't know why she's not coming now. I'll have to speak to her next time I see her. She came for many years, one of the original course members. And she was having difficulty marrying her daughter. So she stopped coming to the class for 6 months, 12 months, like that. And then finally I saw her, I said, what's going on? She goes, oh, my mind is too disturbed. I can't get my daughter married, like that. But then what's the point? Because the nature of the material world is there is always going to be disturbance. So it doesn't mean you give up your devotion. Just like I was preaching yesterday to one young devotee. She came to me. This is like a new devotee. She has been practicing very long. But she came to me and she said, oh, I'm not chanting as much as I was. And she was chanting 16 rounds for a while. And she said, because now I have this problem, now I have that problem, now I have that problem. And if I solve this problem, then I can chant again. I said to her, but the problems don't stop. They just come in a different way, that's all. So you think you'll solve this problem, and then the next problem will just appear. So the point is, the devotee is nishta. Nishta means fixed. A devotee does not fluctuate. Just because everything's difficult doesn't mean we stop coming to the Bhaktivedanta class. Because, oh, this happened, and then that happened, and that happened. Then next year something else will happen. And I tell you now, frankly, right, in 2 years' time, hopefully, and we'll study Canto 10, the ethos of the class will be entirely different. Right? If devotees are going to come, you have to come for Canto 10. Canto 10 is not going to be hop in, hop out like that, because it's a different canto. Right? It's very exalted. So either you're committed and you come, or do whatever you want to do. At the moment, we're a little bit flexible like that. The Canto 10 has to be offered respect. And it cannot be studied. It cannot be studied whimsically. It must be studied very seriously. We don't have any qualification to study Canto 10. So if we study it, it has to be, and everyone has to be on time. And trust me, Leela Mai, not just you, but trust me, if anyone knocks on that door late, I'm not opening the door when Canto 10 happens. Canto 9, then you can have some flexibility. In Canto 10, it will be different. The mood will be different, because it's a very exalted subject matter. So, the quality of the devotee is that he tolerates. Not when things are going difficult, he stops doing his bhakti, or he becomes slack in his devotional service. If anything, if the difficulties come, then we should increase our devotional service. That is the mood. Bali Maharaj surrendered everything to Krishna. So that is the mood of the devotee.
Was it possible that I can get some permission from you? Because I have to cook at home also, probably, and wait until Ashwin comes and then I have to give him and then come to home. Because it's difficult for me. Very difficult. That's what I on Mondays I'm a bit late all the time. But if you want, I can ask permission for you.
In Canto 10, yeah. We'll have to talk
not
about it.
Canto 10,
I'm talking about houses. Yeah, but so many times I've seen you just sitting out there in the courtyard at 7 o'clock. So many times I saw that.
No, Guruji, I'll be having prasadam, I'll be in the kirtan. That's all. I will never sit outside and talk with
you. Kirtan finishes at 7:30
though. 7:30, I didn't come early today. I came
now. Okay. I've seen you many times sitting outside. I've seen you many times here, and then you come late. Many times I've seen you.
Prasadam, I'll be having prasadam, Guruji, because I didn't have.
Then you have to eat afterwards, after the class. I'll be flexible now, but Canto 10, I'm not getting any flexibility. So I'm giving you 1 year notice. So, Prabhupada says that Krishna enjoys being dependent upon the devotee. He likes that. That is Krishna's mood. He wants to be dependent upon the devotee. So we see that at the end of this pastime, Vamanadeva becomes the doorkeeper of Bali Maharaj. He takes that position as the doorkeeper. So Krishna likes that. He likes to serve the devotee. The devotee likes to serve him, and he is always looking for opportunities to serve the devotee. So that is the nature of rasa. And where do we see the rasa at its optimum degree? In Vrindavan. You see, in Vrindavan, Krishna prefers to serve the devotee. Right? He takes the shoes of his father upon his head. You won't see this in the pastimes of Lord Narayan or Lord Nisringadev or other incarnations. But Krishna, he prefers to serve the devotee. So that is the mood. He relishes that. So Vamanadeva he is serving Bali Maharaj, they're having this loving exchange, and then he rewards him by becoming his doorkeeper. So that is the preference of the Lord. The Lord likes to serve the devotees. He always looks after us. And we see in our lives that Krishna always looks after each and every one of us. We don't have any anxiety, really, because Krishna is always looking after us in every way, materially and spiritually. So, any points?
Sorry. I'll tell you an example. I heard recently there was a young boy in Jagannath Puri. He was only 4 or 5 years old. And he loved Jagannath so much that one day he saw a lot of flowers on the market, but he didn't have money to buy. But he was very keen to make a garland. So he made a garland of banana thread, from the banana thread, and took it to Lord Jagannath's deity, and he gave it to the priest. He just overlooked it. He just put it one side, because he said, Jagannath, you need beautiful garlands. What is this? So he went back in the evening after serving the whole day. Then there was a dream. And yes, I followed one thing. So whatever garland he was putting, the things, everything was falling that day. So he didn't know what the problem, why this is happening, what mistake we are doing. So Jagannath didn't accept any garland that day. And so night when he reached home, he had a dream that you didn't do this thing right, that boy. So he came at night and put the garland, and then Lord was happy, and then everything went all right. Now this boy got sick after a few days, and there was nobody to look after him. He was so sick, he was vomiting, and then he became unconscious. And Lord Jagannath came as a boy to serve him. And when he awoke from the consciousness, when he became conscious, then he said, "Who are you? Why are you serving me? I've never seen you." And then Jagannath, he had to give him darshan. So that's how Lord is so affectionate. So many examples are there.
Nice. Any other points?
You take another one.
When Bali Maharaj was thus arrested by Lord Vishnu, who is the most powerful, there was a great roar of lamentation in all directions throughout the upper and lower planetary systems of the universe. So when the demons...
Which one? I'm sorry.
27. Yeah, chapter 21.
Sorry.
That's okay. So... when the demons or materialistic people, when something negative happens to them, they become very upset. If Krishna takes something away, then they lament. So they're all thinking, Bali Maharaj has just been arrested by Garuda, which means he's going to lose the kingdom. Everything's going to Vamanadeva. What will happen to us? Our king has lost his kingdom. So they're very upset. So that is the opposite to a devotee. A materialist or a non-devotee thinks when something's taken away, then he laments. A devotee sees when something is taken away, he thinks that's Krishna's mercy. So it is the opposite consciousness. So that is the difference. So we're seeing all the there's a great uproar. Everyone thinks, oh, this is such a bad thing. Bali Maharaj himself, he thinks this is the most fortunate thing. So that is what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. Bhagavatam teaches us what is black, what is white. What is good, what is bad. What is devotion, what is non-devotion. What is devotee, what is non-devotee. So Bhagavatam is teaching us simultaneously. We should follow in the footsteps of Bali Maharaj, one of the 12 Mahajans. Mahajan Yenikata Sapanta. Follow his footsteps. And it shows us what we should not do. Do not lament. How does Krishna say? Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasajikajinakamakya. Do not lament, do not hanker. So the non-devotees, they lament, they hanker. That's what their whole life is about. Lamentation and hankering. And the devotee is the opposite. O King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vamana Dev, then spoke to Bali Maharaj, the most liberal and celebrated personality, whom he had arrested with the ropes of Varuna. Bali Maharaj had lost all bodily luster, but he was nonetheless fixed in his determination. Jagannath Ram Prabhu.
When one is bereft of all his possessions, he is certainly reduced in bodily luster. But although Bali Maharaj had lost everything, he was fixed in his determination to satisfy Vamana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita, such a person is called Sthita Prajna. A pure devotee is never deviated from the service of the Lord, despite all difficulties and impediments offered by the illusory energy. Generally, men who have wealth and opulence are famous, but Bali Maharaj became famous for all time by being deprived of all his possessions. This is the special mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead towards his devotees. The Lord says, Yatyaham Anupurhanami Harishya Tar Dhanam Sunai. As the first installment of his special favor, the Lord takes away all the possessions of his devotee. A devotee, however, is never disturbed by such a loss. He continues his service, and the Lord amply rewards him beyond the expectations of any common man.
So what are the points here?
Devotee never deviated from service of the Lord. Prabhupada is the best example. We were recalling this morning in the class that he had two severe heart attacks, and he himself wrote in the diary that if he had next attack, he will definitely die. And then Krishna came in the dream, and maybe everything, the whole ocean was silent. Next day. How much difficulty Prabhupada faced, I don't think anybody can imagine even. Inconceivable difficulty. Jew temple, same thing.
Any other points?
Guru Maharaj was saying when you chant Hari, obviously. This is when Krishna takes away everything. You chant Hari, but he actually added on to that. When you chant Hari, actually he's taking away all the sufferings, in fact. So, just in this context, when I was reading it, I just thought of that.
Good point. Anything else?
Though the Lord takes away the possessions of the devotee, but he always avoids them.
Yeah, so Prabhupada is explaining that a devotee must come to the platform of nishtha. And nishtha means we must be fixed. So our process is a process of gradual purification and we need to increase our shraddha or faith. Now, as our shraddha or faith increases, we go through different levels of bhakti. So we go from beginning in sadhu sangha, shraddha is first, sadhu sangha, vajana kriya, anatta nibriti, and nishtha. So nishtita, bhakti, is what we're aiming for, at least on our level. We can say we're aiming for prema and bhava, but realistically that's a long, long way for us. You don't see Bhava Bhaktas walking around. Even in ISKCON, you don't see a lot of many. You know, some exalted devotees have attained high states of consciousness, but most devotees are struggling with anattas. Most devotees are just on anatta nibriti. You know, they're just dealing with the same old material desires they've been dealing with for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. You've been practicing devotees, chanting Hare Krishna for years, but still it's all the same anattas coming up. So some devotees, when they become more advanced, they become nishtha. Nishtha means free from anattas. Prabhupada said 70% fruit. Like when 70% of the nathas are gone, that's like nishta. Means like very, very fixed, steady in devotional service. Means you always come for the Bhakti Vedanta course. Not like, oh, I'll come, or if I don't come, or if I feel like it, or I don't feel like it, or I've got a sore thumb today, or like that. So whatever the reason, but you become fixed. That's called nishta. And Prabhupada said, he was actually here in Melbourne, and Balaram Prabhu, he was the temple president before Aniruddha Prabhu, and he said to Prabhupada, he said, what is the qualification for one to take Brahman initiation? Prabhupada said he must be nishta. Nishta means he must be fixed in devotional service. Because nishta means you're serving the deity. Brahman initiation, the second initiation, means you're serving the deity. So if you're serving the deity, you have to be fixed. Now you can't ring up and say, oh, I can't do my service today, I can't do my service. I mean, sometimes you have some emergency, but you have to be there for the service. It's like we go to India on pilgrimage, and I've been to temples over the years, and the pujari has been a pujari in the temple for 30 years, or 40 years, or 50 years, or sometimes even 60 years, serving the same deity for 60 years on end. Right? Now, this is nishta. This is fixed in devotional service. That's what we need to become. You see, like Prabhupada installed Radha Madhav in Mayapur. What was that, I think, 1972, that is? So what's that now, 42 years? Right? Same pujaris. Jananivas Puru Pankajangri. Same pujaris, 42 years. And everyone knows they will be there till the end. You know, they're nearly 70 now, actually. They're late 60s. And, another 10 years, maybe, or 20 years, however. But they just stay there, fixed in devotional service, always. So that is what we are aiming for. And Prabhupada is saying that if you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, you have to become fixed. Nishta means not wavering. So that means you have to become free from anartas, free from material desires. If you have material desires, right, then your service becomes anishtita, which means unregular. Sometimes you'll do the service, sometimes you won't do it. Sometimes you chant your round, sometimes you won't chant. Sometimes you chant attentively, sometimes you chant very inattentively. So when you're anishta, then you always perform the devotional service properly. That is the point. So then Prabhupada says that whatever a devotee does, that will last. So Krishna confirms this in the Bhagavad Gita. What is that verse where he says? Swapamapyasya. Swapa means little bit, dharmasya. Trayati mahato bayat. So swapa means a little bit of devotional service. So even if you just do a small amount of devotional service, that protects you. So it's interesting, because as this pastime, in this part of the chapter, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that even Shukracharya, he is blessed by Vamana Dev. The comment is there, right? Because he has some bhakti. He's doing some devotional service. He's materialistic, but he's doing some devotional service. So then, Vamana Dev said, not in the verses, but in the commentary, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Vamana Dev says to Bali Maharaj, I will bless your guru also. And he will also go to Sutala, to the hellish planets, because he gets sent to the hellish planets. But actually, it's interesting, because Prabhupada explains, in the end of the fifth canto, we already heard this, the subterranean heavenly planets are more opulent than the heavenly planets. So he sends Bali Maharaj to the hellish planets, but he has more material opulence even than Indra. And he sends Shukracharya, who is materialistic, he's even offensive actually to Vamana Dev, but because he does some bhakti, then the Lord blesses him also. He said, you can take your guru also, and he can also enjoy with all the demons. So this is the power of devotional service. Prabhupada points this out. You just do a little bit of devotional service, you'll get unlimited benefit. That is the potency of bhakti. And we cannot understand how much benefit we get from bhakti. We can't understand, fathom. We can't imagine what our destination is. Srila Prabhupada said, if we just chant 16 rounds a day, it means attentive rounds, not just anything. 16 rounds a day, follow the four regulative principles, Prabhupada said, you will go back to Godhead. So that's not very much, actually. We don't have to do very much. We'll go to Goloka Vrindavan, which is like, we cannot even imagine what a benediction that is. Just for doing a small amount of seva, we get the ultimate benediction. That's the potency of devotional service. In one sense, it's not easy, because you see in Kali Yuga, people, they find that difficult. Not many people can chant 16 rounds a day. Even amongst the devotees, they find it difficult to chant 16 rounds. And to follow the regulative principles. Even the devotees find that difficult. But if you can do that, right, which is not so much in one sense, then you can go back to Goloka Vrindavan. That is the potency. And then Prabhupada points out that he quotes the verse from the Bhagavatam, which Prabhupada said affected his own life when he studied it. That when Krishna is especially merciful to a devotee, he takes everything away. So that is special mercy. So when it starts happening to you, that is a sign of Krishna's mercy. And the fact is, it happens to all of us. I was in Sydney in 2001 or 2000. I think it was 2001. I was in Sydney when the last time Tamal Krishna Maharaj came to Australia. So I was in Sydney and he was giving class in Indrajumna Swami. At the end of the class, he said to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he asked the question, he said, is it possible to go back to Godhead without great suffering? And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, no. Not possible. You have to go through a lot of suffering to go back to the spiritual world. Because Krishna will take everything from you. And Burijan Prabhu said to me one time, he said, it's an intense movement. And he said, the closer you get to Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan, the more intense it becomes. So devotional service is not an easy thing. If we advertise it like that, no one will join. If you preach like that, no one will join. When we preach, we say, yeah, it's blissful, it's fantastic.
Feast and dance.
What's that?
Feast and dance.
Yeah, just chant, dance, and feast and be happy. But actually, it is blissful. Because it happens to us, each and every devotee. Krishna takes everything from us. But at the same time, we're happy. Why? Because we're serving Krishna. So what's the problem? But it's not possible. It's not possible to go back to Godhead without everything being taken. Krishna will take everything. And Burijan Prabhu said to me one time, he said, it just hasn't happened to you yet. He said to me, he said, Krishna's not taken everything yet. He said, he will soon. Just a matter of time. He takes everything. When he's ready, then everything is pulls it. And then there's nothing. There's only Krishna. And then you have a choice at that time. Do I surrender to Krishna or do I surrender to Maya? Right? See, some devotees, they go back to Maya, and some devotees, they go to Krishna. So we have to make that choice. So, any points?
If he takes away everything, he gives you the power before the tolerance. So that you can tolerate that situation. He gives you that kind of attitude, mentally prepared, it mentally before it gives the trouble to you. So that's the mercy of that.
Any other points? O King of the demons, you have promised to give me 3 steps of land, but I have occupied the entire universe with 2 steps. Now think about where I should put my 3rd. As far as the sun and moon shine with the stars, and as far as the clouds pour rain, all the land throughout the universe is in your possession. Of these possessions, with 1 step I have occupied Buraloka. And with my body I have occupied the entire sky and all directions. And in your presence, with my 2nd step, I have occupied the upper planetary system. What a wonderful.
According to the Vedic description of the planetary system, all the planets move from east to west. The sun, the moon, and five other planets such as Mars and Jupiter orbit one above another. Vamadeva, however, expanding his body and extending his steps, occupied the entire planetary system.
So what are the points?
Whatever Bhagavad Gita says, Krishna is unlimited. You cannot conceive, inconceivable.
Yeah, everything blocks there. Any other point?
They are saying sun and moon. What about the other three planets? What are those three?
It says three.
Jupiter.
No, it says five planets.
Mars, Jupiter.
It says five planets. Sun and moon. Then Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Venus, and Mercury. And then there's two shadow planets, the Rahu and Ketu. In Vedic astronomy, astrology, they have nine planets. When they look at your chart, they say there's nine planets. Any other points?
The Lord is showing his progress.
Yeah. So the point is that everything belongs to Krishna. So he's not taking anything from Bali Maharaj anyway, because it's already his. Bali Maharaj has a conception that everything is mine. I'm the emperor of this universe. So he thinks, or everyone thinks that Bali Maharaj, everything has been taken from him. The fact is, nothing belongs to any of us anyway. Right? In this one lifetime, we are given certain facility. The facilities, in other words, it's just given to us. It's like a quota. It says initial Upanishad, you get a quota. But it doesn't belong to you. Right? And then when you leave this body, you don't have that quota anymore. It's gone. So it's just something which is temporarily ours, you could say. So it means that everything belongs to Krishna. So ultimately, when Krishna takes everything, we cannot complain because it belongs to him anyway. Prabhupada explains, Krishna himself explains in Bhagavad Gita, the only thing that Krishna does not have, which he requires or which he hankers for, is our devotion. So when we give something to Krishna, Krishna is not so much interested in what we are giving, because what we're giving belongs to him anyway. But he's interested in what is the mood of devotion in which we are giving the offering. That's what Krishna is attracted to. Are we giving it to him out of love, out of prem, or are we giving it to him with some material desire? Or are we not giving him everything we should be giving him? Sometimes we give, but we're holding back many things. Sometimes we become proud when we give something to Krishna. We give $5,000, and we think, oh, I gave so much like that. But actually, everything belongs to Krishna anyway. Our philosophy is Yukta Vairagya. Our philosophy is everything which is given to us by Krishna should be used in his service. So it doesn't mean that if you earn $1,000 in your job, you give $1,000 to the deity, to Radha Vallabha, because you need to keep, especially these days, most of that money to maintain your family. But that money which is given to you as your quota from Krishna, that should be used to maintain the family so that the family becomes devotees. And in that way you become purified. So devotees should not be irresponsible. Sometimes they become a bit irresponsible and they give so much to Krishna then the family is suffering. So there has to be a proper maturity in our renunciation. Because Rupa Goswami says that you keep enough for emergencies, you keep enough to maintain the family, and the rest you give to Krishna. So, any points? Because you have been unable to give charity according to your promise, the rule is that you should go down to live in the hellish planets. Therefore, in accordance with the order of Shukracharya, your spiritual master, now go down and live there. Sri Chaitanya Prabhu.
It is said, Narayana Parasarva is not the Krishna Vidyati. Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of God as Narayan never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. Bhagavatam 6:17-28. A devotee engaged in the service of Narayan is always in equilibrium. A devotee always lives transcendently. Although he may appear to have gone to hell or heaven, he does not live in either place. Rather, he always lives in Vaikuntha. Sāgunāya samapitya etnam brahma bhūyaya kalpata. Vamanadeva asked Bali Maharaj to go to the hellish planets, apparently just to show the entire universe how tolerant he was, and Bali Maharaj did not hesitate to carry out the order. A devotee does not live alone. Of course, everyone lives with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but because the devotee is engaged in his service, he actually does not live in any material condition. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, thus he prays to take birth as an insignificant insect in the association of the devotees. But because devotees are engaged in the service of the Lord, anyone who lives with them also lives in Vaikuntha.
What are the points in this verse? And purport.
A devotee engaged is always in equilibrium. It doesn't matter where he has or heaven. He is interested only in the service. To please the Lord.
Anything else?
Prabhupada carried Vrindavan wherever he went. So, wherever the devotees are, that will be the Dham and Jory could stand and infer from this as well.
That's nice. Any other points? So, everything is the same for the devotee. Whether you're in heaven or whether you're in hell. Devotee is not concerned with the externals, he's concerned with service to Krishna. Just like when we were brahmacharis, the temple used to be funded by the brahmacharis, the brahmacharinis mainly. We would go out and we'd sell paintings and stickers and different things in order to collect funds. So we go to Africa. We traveled to Africa. One time I went, there was four of us, brahmacharis. And we went to places like Tanzania and Zambia and even Kenya, like that. But these places were hellish, much more hellish than Australia. You know, Australia is like swaga. It's like heavenly planets. Everything here is nice. If Melbourne's number one city in the world. It won it again this year. It wins nearly every year for, you know, 20 years or so. No, it's the best place in the world to live practically. You know, so every standard of living here is so high, no difficulty really. Whereas in those places we traveled to, it was hellish. People were desperate, they were poor, they were in poverty, and you couldn't get proper food. We lived there, we were selling there for a few months. And we couldn't get real vegetables. Maybe get some potato or maybe some cabbage. You couldn't get vegetables. You couldn't get milk. You could only get UHT milk, like the long life milk which they'd sent from another country. We couldn't get proper food. And the situation there was hellish. People were living in slums. People were just living with no facility, just like a piece of plastic. You see it also in India. You go to Mumbai and you go to Delhi and people just living like in poverty. So it's hell. Hell is not somewhere else. It is here on the earth. It is certain places are like hell. And then, we were selling paintings, so we went to these places and then we went to places like Seychelles. Seychelles are tropical islands off the coast of Africa. And so it's like heavenly planets. Beautiful. You know, it's like Fiji. It's just like heavenly, beautiful. Right? And everything there is, the weather is perfect and everything is very nice. And you know, but because we were brahmacharis, we were just fixed in devotional service. We were just collecting money for the temple. So whether we went to the hellish place or the heavenly place, it was the same. Every morning we just got up, we chanted our rounds, we studied Bhagavad Gita, and then we went out and collected for the temple. Right? So a devotee does not become concerned, oh, I'm in heavenly situation or hellish situation. Sometimes you see devotees get like this. Oh, I need to be in a nice place. I need to have nice facility. But that's not the mood of the devotee, actually. The mood of the devotee is to try to serve Krishna under all circumstances. Like Prabhupada, if you read about the early days when he was in the Bowery, I was listening recently. One of the devotees was speaking on Prabhupada's disappearance day or appearance day. And he was saying that he was reading from the early days of Prabhupada in the Lilamrita 65-66. Prabhupada would have to step over drunks to get into his loft where he was staying in the Bowery. Bowery means it was like bad place in New York. Now, just like if you go to Melbourne, like if you go down to maybe Grey Street in St Kilda or one of those bad places, you know, it's drunk people just laying around and vomit and urine and all these things. This is where Prabhupada was living, 1966. He would have to step over drunk people just to walk up the stairs to his... Okay. So, a devotee, whether he's in hellish situation or opulent situation, he's the same in serving Krishna. So then Prabhupada was there in 1966. Then 1976, Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Rameshwar Maharaj, they picked Prabhupada up from the airport and brought him to Manhattan in New York, and they showed him ISKCON had a 13-story skyscraper building. And then Prabhupada got out of the car and he walked in, they gave him a tour of the building. And then when Prabhupada was sitting on the roof having darshan, the devotees, he said, I came here 10 years ago, I was living in the Bowery. Now I'm a millionaire and I have my own building. So a devotee is in heaven or hell, he still serves Krishna the same. Prabhupada said, in the beginning of ISKCON, I had no facility and I was happy. And now I have so much facility and still I am happy. So that is the mood of the devotee. He doesn't become fixed that I have to have this, I have to have that, I need that facility. We just serve Krishna. If Krishna gives facility, we use him in his service. Just like Prabhupada said, if we get $1 million, we'll spend that by tomorrow in Krishna's service. Because there's so much to do. So Prabhupada said, you give us $1 million, by tomorrow we will get another million and we'll spend that in Krishna's service. So that is the mood of the devotee. And then Prabhupada says, a devotee, well actually it's not Prabhupada, it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes this comment in his commentary. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, a devotee cannot go to hell. Because when you do bhakti, it protects you from a hellish birth. That's why it says in the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami explains, a devotee cannot see Yamaraj. It's not possible. There's no fear for the devotee to see Yamaraj. And it explains in the 64 items of devotional service, one of the 64 items is to wear the Kanti Mala, right, which we never take off. Right? Do you ever take your Kanti Mala off? Right? I never take mine off. Right? If I take it off, sometimes if I go to the barber or something, you know, in India, you know, you maybe have to move to so they can shave or something, or very, very rarely. Or sometimes, if I get a massage or something, sometimes you have to take it off. But I don't feel comfortable when it's not on my body. Because it says in Nectar of Devotion, and the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that one is wearing Kanti Mala and Tilak, the Yamadutas will not approach that person. In other words, you will not see Yamaraj. You can't go to any hellish situation. So that is the potency of bhakti, even a little bit of devotion. And I tell people in my family, I tell them about the potency of Tulsi. Right? Many of them wear Tulsi beads in my family. You know, the silver or the gold. You know, they don't even chant Hare Krishna or do any devotional sadhana. But they know, they have this faith that the Tulsi will protect them. That is the potency of bhakti. Just a little bit of devotion, Krishna says, will protect you from the most dangerous type of fear. So Bali Maharaj cannot go to hell anyway because he's a devotee. So when it says he goes to hell, it means they go to the subterranean heavenly planets. He gets a situation better than Indra's, actually. And then Prabhupada says that this is where, it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in this purport for this commentary. He says, even Shukracharya, who is the guru of the demons, He even gets, because of a little bit of bhakti that he has done, because he's a brahmana, then he also gets the same facility as Bali Maharaj. And Prabhupada explains that, or the Bhagavatam actually explains, Prahlad Maharaj explains in the 7th canto, that if you do devotional service, then 14 generations of your family also get benefits. So sometimes someone passes away in our family, but there's no loss, even if they don't practice bhakti. But just because they're connected to you by birth, the Lord assures that they will get elevation.
Where is it mentioned?
7th canto. In the teachings of Nisringadev speaking to Prahlad Maharaj. So it says that if one is a Kanishta Adhikari, not advanced devotee, then one generation gets benefited. If one is Majjhima, which most devotees are Majjhima, 14 generations get benefited. And then if someone is Mahabhagavat, like Prabhupada, then 100 generations they get benefited. So that is how much the Lord appreciates his devotee. Then he says, oh, you're related to that person? Then you will also get special treatment. It's like sometimes you go somewhere and someone says, oh, you're related to that person or you know that person? Okay, then go. You can also have facility. So sometimes we go somewhere and just because we know the person, then we also get nice facility. I remember I was serving Tamal Krishna Maharaj in 1994 in the Navadvip Mandal Parikram. And the there was like 1,000 devotees on the Parikrama. So they had one special truck for the sannyasis, you know, for all their bags and everything. And then they drive each day and they take the trucks with all the bags. And at the end of it, we'd walk all day. And then when you got to the place we were staying, then they would pull everything off the trucks. So I was serving Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and Atul Krishna Prabhu, my good friend, he was serving Prabhu Vishnu Swami. So then, because we were serving them, because all the devotees would get there, then 1,000 devotees, at the end of the day they get there and there's 20 trucks and they take off, you know, it took you 1 hour to find your bags. There's 20 trucks and 100 trucks, you know, 1,000 devotees and stuff everywhere. So because we were serving Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and then all the sannyasis had their own truck. So we put our bags on that truck as well. Because then we would say our bags were the sannyasis' bags. We'd say, oh yeah, this is the belong to the sannyasis. And said, okay. So we put our guru's bags there. We put our bags there. So because we're connected to the great person, you also get the benefit. That's the point. It was a little tricky. But that's the point. If you're connected to the great person, then you also get the benefits. So just because we're connected to our guru or connected to Prabhupada or like that, we get recognized by Krishna. It's not so much what we're doing that Krishna is recognizing us, but because we are connected to someone who is very powerful. And actually at the end of the day it's Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada said 16 rounds, 4 regular principles, they'll go back to Godhead. So Krishna is bound by that statement. That's why Krishna says to Arjuna, declare it boldly. You say it, then I will do it. So if Prabhupada said it, that means we will get the benefits. Any points?
Actually, there is a story. I mean, I think some devotees were going with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu. And there was a place where they were charging the taxes. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was at the back. So they all waited for him to come. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, the person let them all go without charging them toll or something.
Yeah, Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Yeah.
Okay. Far from being elevated to the heavenly planets or fulfilling one's desire, one who does not properly give a beggar what he has promised falls down to a hellish condition of life. So in the, there's no purport here by Prabhupada, but Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments that there are four purusharthas, which means dharma, artha, karma, and moksha. So, and this is also explained by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Nectar of Devotion, that if you render bhakti, then the four purusharthas, they stand at the doorway of bhakti as servants. So moksha, karma, artha, and dharma, these benefits, they are given to a devotee automatically just by performing bhakti. If Krishna desires. So devotees sometimes, they do service, they become wealthy. Not because it was their destiny, but it was Krishna's mercy. Or karma means sense gratification. Bhakti gives you sense gratification, gives you opportunity for sense gratification. Or moksha. Moksha means liberation. So all these things can come just by performing devotional service. So a devotee engages in devotional service, and if Krishna wants, he can give you unlimited facility. And in the Bhagavatam, it states again and again that when you do devotional service, you also get material facility. It says wealth, fame, many, many benedictions, they come, long life, they come by performing devotional service. That is the potency. So even though we may not have the karma to get these things, but if Krishna desires, you can get these things, if he desires. It doesn't mean you will become wealthy. But sometimes you see devotees, they just, wealth comes. And they're only doing service to Krishna, but that's the benediction, which is there. Any points? Okay, one more verse. Being falsely proud of your possessions, you promised to give me land, but you could not fulfill your promise. Therefore, because your promise was false, you must live for a few years in hellish life.
The false prestige of thinking, I am very rich and I possess such vast property, is another side of material life. Everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and no one else possesses anything. This is the real fact. Isha Vasham Idam Sarvam Yat Kincha Jagat Jayam Jagat. Bali Maharaja was undoubtedly the most exalted devotee. Whereas previously he had maintained a misunderstanding due to false prestige. By the supreme will of the Lord, he now had to go to the hellish planets, but because he went there by the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he lived there more opulently than one could expect to live in the planets of heaven. A devotee always lives with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, engaging in his service, and therefore he is always transcendental to hellish or heavenly residences.
Any interesting points?
So the Lord didn't accept the third step on his head. And he said, if you can put your third step on, put on my head.
Next chapter.
So he didn't accept them. He descended to the hellish planet, saying that he had not fulfilled the promise. It means he did not accept.
No, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says there's like a, it's like a little bit of a joke going on here.
Okay.
They're just exchanging some fun between the two of them.
Okay.
Everyone else is taking it seriously, but Bali Maharaj is just, he's actually happy.
Okay.
Any other point? So, ultimately, we have to be humble before Krishna. If a devotee becomes proud of his material possessions, then Krishna will take that away. Anything we become proud of, Krishna will take, because pride ruins the offering. If you become proud when you offer something to Krishna, then it ruins the offering. Krishna does not relish the offering. So you'll see that whenever we become proud, then Krishna, he takes that pride away in due course of time. You know, many times we've given the example, just like you're giving class. You know, many times I've given class, and then I can see everyone's, you know, listening very attentively to the class. So then in my mind, I start thinking, well, this is a very good class. I'm giving a very good class. Then suddenly Krishna just takes everything out of your head. You know, whatever points you were making, sometimes you can't even remember what you were saying, like one sentence ago, and suddenly it's all just gone. And then you just look. Now I've been giving class for many years. I'm good at, you know, kind of navigating that situation. So I just keep talking and just keep looking at everyone. And in my mind, I'm thinking, I can't remember what I'm saying anymore. And then I try to become a bit humble. And then if you become a little bit humble, then Krishna puts it back in your head again, and then you can get back onto your point. But other times, if you don't become humble, then you're just speaking, but then you can't remember what you're saying. And sometimes I have to stop the class. I just have to say, what was it I was talking about? Sometimes it's because we're proud. So if you become proud when we do any service, then Krishna, he does not relish the service. And he will remove the pride in due course of time. And Prabhupada points this out. Actually, whenever we do something, it's not because... Or if we offer something to Krishna, we're just offering Krishna's energy anyway. So we're not really doing anything. You know, all the sabji comes from Krishna. So when you're cooking for Krishna, you're just offering his own possession, his own energy. So the only thing he's interested in is the devotional attitude or the bhakti that we're offering to him. So that is the mood the devotee has to develop. And when we offer something to Krishna, it's just for his pleasure. And after some time in devotional service, that has to become the main motivation. Otherwise you lose interest. You can't maintain your devotional service years and years on end if there's not real, genuine sincerity in the offering. Otherwise you'll just go away. You can't just stay on the platform of material motivation forever. So any points?
Prabhupada says, punar mushiko bhava, become a mouse again. Someone becomes proud.
I remember one time, Tamal Krishna was giving darshan up in that darshan room. Lord Jagannath's room was up there. Was the room was full, packed with devotees. And I came in, and there wasn't room for me to sit because there's so many devotees. And there was a couch at the back. So he said, you can sit on the couch. So it means I was on the same level as him. He was sitting on the couch, I was sitting on the couch. Most of the devotees were on the floor. But then more devotees came, and more senior devotees came. So then he said, okay, now you can sit on the floor. He said, again, become a mouse. That's what the guru does to us. The guru makes us humble. Because sometimes we become proud, and the guru brings us, senior devotees, they bring us back to perspective. That's why you have to always take this association of more advanced devotees. When Rupa Goswami says sadhu sangha in Nectar of Devotion, he says five most powerful items of bhakti. When he says sadhu sangha, in the commentary, Jiva Goswami says this means advanced association. You have to get advanced association because the advanced devotees make you humble. Otherwise, you get a little puffed up. Srila Prabhupada ki.